We're in this series on faith, looking at Hebrews 11. And one of the things that I think I've kind of failed to do over the last couple of weeks is kind of give you the background of why the author of Hebrews is writing this to this particular group of people. And I apologize for failing to do that. The reason is because the people that the author is writing to, and I'm not sure exactly who wrote the book of Hebrews. There's a lot of different debates about who wrote it. And I'm not going to say definitively who did write it. But the author was writing to encourage its recipients to persevere, to stand true in their faith. More than likely, there was something going on in their Christian walk or in their environment or the place in which they lived. The persecution was either becoming so great or their doubts were starting to get in the way of their walk with Christ. Or it might have just been they were waiting too long. They've been waiting for so long because they hear the promises of what Christ is coming to do and all these different things, are amazing things that are going to happen. And if you wait long enough and you don't see those amazing things happen, there starts to creep in a little bit of doubt of whether it's real. And so the author of Hebrews is writing to these people to help them persevere, to stand true, to continue on the journey that God has called them on. And if you look back in Hebrews chapter 10, it says very clearly, it says, in verse 32, it says, "Remember those earlier days after you received the light, when you stood your ground in the great contest in the face of suffering. Sometimes you were publicly exposed to insult and persecution. At other times you stood side by side with those who were so treated. You sympathized with those in prison and joyfully accepted the confiscation of your property because you knew that you yourselves had a better and lasting possessions. So do not throw away your confidence. It will be richly rewarded. You need to persevere, so that when you have done the will of God, you will receive what he has promised. For in just a very little while, he who is coming will come and not delay. My righteous ones will live by faith, and if he shrinks back, I will not be pleased with him. But we are not of those who shrink back and are destroyed, but of those who believe and are saved." And then we get into chapter 11, and I'm just going to read through this to kind of set up where we're going this morning. It says, "Now faith is being sure of what you hope for and certain of what you do not see. This is what the ancients were commended for. By faith we understand that the universe was formed at God's command, so that what is seen was not made out of what is visible. By faith Abel offered God a better sacrifice than Cain did. By faith he was commended as a righteous man when God spoke well of this of his offering, and by faith he still speaks even though he is dead. By faith Enoch was taken from this life, so that he did not experience death. He could not be found because God had taken him away. For before he was taken, he was commended as one who pleased God. And without faith, it's impossible to please God. Because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. By faith, Noah, when warned about things not seen, in holy fear built an ark to save his family. By faith, he condemned the world, and became heir of the righteousness that comes by faith. By faith, Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went. Even though he did not know where he was going, by faith he made his home in the promised land. Like a stranger in a foreign country, he lived in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, who were heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city with foundations, whose architect and builder is God. By faith, Abraham," or Sarah, I like Sarah in here, "by faith, Sarah, even though she was past age, Sarah herself was barren, was enabled to become a father because he considered him faithful who had made the promise. And so from this one man, and he as good as dead, came descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as countless as the sand on the seashore." So that's where we're at. We've covered all those passages in the last 6-7 weeks. I can't remember how long it's been now. And we're right here in now verse 13. And verse 13 is kind of an interlude. It's not one certain person that it's talking about. Like we've talked about Enoch and Noah and Abraham and Abel. It's not one certain person it's talking about. It's talking about a collective of people. And most of it's alluding back to Abraham. But I really struggled with this passage until there was this one little thing that popped in my head that made all things clear. And I'm going to try and share that with you to help make this next passage clear. And it's kind of an illustration. I was studying it and I was struggling with it. And all of a sudden, there's this little voice in my head said, "Do you remember what it was like
when you were getting ready to go to Wyoming. And I was like, I know it's weird. I know that sounds weird. But I got to thinking about it. Have you ever anticipated an event or a trip or a vacation? Have you ever planned, maybe I'm the only one, have you ever got into, like, I know the Peters were really, well, most of them were really excited about heading off to Hawaii, okay? Kind of an exciting thing. Have you ever had a trip or a vacation planned, or you were knew you were going someplace that you were just, oh, you couldn't wait. You were just so excited. You were just anticipating it. You were dreaming about it. You were thinking about it. You're putting your energy into it. And you had all these other things that were going on around you, but it didn't really seem to matter. Things that would normally bother you, things that would really get you upset. Like right before I went to Wyoming, I'm just going to give you this example. Right before I went to Wyoming, the washing machine broke down. I mean, like the day before I was supposed to head out there, our washing machine broke down. You know what? Normally when things like that break down, you go, oh, you're so mad. She was still mad, but you're trying to figure things out. You're trying to get a schedule on how to fix it. And, you know, I'm usually really cheap. I mean, I'm really cheap. You know, I will try to fix it myself first off, and then after I've messed it up even worse, then I call a repairman to come and try and fix the thing that I messed up that was already broken, and then after that hasn't worked and done all these different steps, and I call some friends to come in, and we try to fix it, and all these different things. You know what I'm saying? But when you're anticipating something, all that stuff kind of falls away. Before I went to Wyoming and the washing machine broke down, I didn't even worry about it. I just went out and bought a new washing machine. I just did. I just, like, I'm not going to deal with it. I'm not going to try to fix the old one. I'm just going to go buy a new one so everything is going to be all right. You start doing things and acting differently when you're anticipating something amazing about to come, something that you're looking forward to, something that you're yearning for, something that you're wanting so badly. You know what I'm saying? You start acting differently. And all of a sudden, I started reading this passage that we're about to look at, and I started looking at it through the eyes of, are we really anticipating? Are we really excited about the Lord's return? Are we really excited about what's coming? Are we looking forward to it? Are we excited about it? You see, that makes all the difference. It makes all the difference in how we live right now if we're anticipating, looking with expectation to what's to come. You see, it changes our minds. It changes our attitude. It changes our values. It changes everything about us when we're looking forward instead of looking at our present circumstance. Because if we start looking at our present circumstance, we start going, ugh. Gee, this is hard. This is ugh. I don't like this. We get grumpy. We get mean. Our light doesn't shine. You see, that's what this passage is talking about here in verse 13 of Hebrews chapter 11, when it says, all these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance. And they admitted that they were aliens, strangers on the earth. That was for you. Did you hear it? Aliens. That was for you. It says, and they admitted they were aliens and strangers on the earth. People who say such things show that they are looking for a country of their own. If they had been thinking of the country they had left, they would have had an opportunity to return. Instead, they were longing for a better country, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. You see, there's a different attitude. There's a different mindset. There's a different desire in our lives when we're looking forward to the things that are coming than just living in the present and recognizing the things that are going on right around us. You see, people who live by faith and not by sight, which is what God calls us to do, people who live by faith and not by sight are looking ahead. Look what it says. All these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance. You see, they had confidence. Even in the midst of where they were living at right now, they were looking ahead, and they had confidence in the one who gave them the promise. Look back just a couple passages. It says, by faith, Abraham, even though he was past age, and Sarah herself was barren, was unable to become a father because he considered what? Because he considered him faithful who had made the promise. You see, they're looking at it from a distance. Have you ever seen anything at a distance? You're not sure exactly what you're looking at? You're all looking at me like, something's wrong this morning. It's not wrong. This is good. You're looking at things from a distance and you can't exactly tell what it is. It's just an object, or it's just a light, or it's just a shadow, or it's just something that you can't exactly make out what it is in the distance. But as you travel towards it, it gets clearer and clearer. And the more you see it, the more clear it becomes, the more excited you become. You see, that's what people are looking at, the promise of God. That's what Abraham was thinking about when he says, you know what? I'm going to bless all the nations of the earth. He says, all this land is going to be yours. He never received the land, but he was looking at it from a distance. And he recognized, you know what? I don't have it. It's not my possession. I don't feel blessed by all the nations. I'm not blessing all the nations of the world. But he says, you know what? I can't see it clearly, but I know that God said it's there. I know that promise, and I know it's going to happen because I know, not in myself, that I'm going to make it, but I know the one who promised me is faithful. If he says it's going to happen, it is going to happen. There is no ifs, ands, or buts about it. He will fulfill his promise, and every single promise that he makes to us will become true. If he says, I'm coming back, guess what? He's coming back. He is. You don't have to doubt it. You don't have to wonder about it. You don't have to think, well, I don't know if that's right. He's coming. And when he comes back, you know what he's going to do? He's going to take those who are part of his family, those who have confessed their name in Jesus Christ, he's going to take them to be where he was in heaven. You don't have to doubt it. You don't have to worry about it. You don't have to think about it. You don't have to do anything. All you have to do is believe it. And live it. You see, you can have a confidence in this life that goes beyond the things of this world because you know what's coming. Because God said this is going to happen. Guess what? It will happen. There is a confidence in people who live by faith. You know why there's a confidence? Because they know God is true. They know they don't have to worry. They know even in the face of death. And these people that he's writing to in Hebrews, they were facing death. Guys, it wasn't this minor, we're going to take, the Navy. We're going to take God out of the, we're going to take God out of the they call it? The oath or something like that. Did you hear that? The Navy out in Colorado, the little yard they have out, and it is a little yard. I mean, it's probably big in our eyes, but in God's eyes, it's just a little bitty thing. We're going to take God out of that equation, out of the oath that every naval officer or every Navy person has to take.
Air Force,
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to insult any Navy people out there. They're going to take it out. Yeah, why would the Navy be in Colorado? That makes no sense whatsoever. I'm glad you're here this morning, Roger, to keep me straight. They do have a big lake there somewhere in Colorado, though. But yeah, the Navy in Colorado makes no sense at all. So appreciate that. We can all, oh, no. Oh, no, the Air Force is going to, oh, no. You know what? It doesn't matter because the Air Force isn't going to be here anyway. My confidence is not in the Air Force, the Navy, or the Marines, or the Army, or any of them. My confidence is not in our government. Whew! Amen? Whew! All right. My confidence is not in the United States of America. It's not. I love my country, okay? But my confidence isn't there. My confidence isn't in anything but Jesus. That's it. If you have your confidence in Jesus, you don't have to worry about today or tomorrow or yesterday because he has them all in the palm of his hand, every bit of it. You know, there's so much worry going on in this world. We're so concerned about all these different things. And yes, you should be concerned. Yes, you should be active. I'm not saying sit back like a wallflower. I'm saying live your life, but live it in confidence that all these things are really in God's control. And no matter what goes on around me, I'm still in the palm of his hand. Amen. All right? That's good stuff. You see, and that's what they're talking about. He says, I can't see it clearly. I don't know exactly what it's going to be like. I don't know when the trumpet sounds, and I don't know how Jesus is going to come back. It's a vision that's so far off in my mind, I don't know. I can see it as a shadow. I can see it as a glimpse, but I don't know how it's going to happen. I know there's going to be a loud noise. I know the trumpet of the Lord is going to sound, and time will be no more, and the resurrection is going to be there, and Jesus is going to come ascending from the clouds, and how everyone on earth is going to see it at one time, I don't know, but I know it's coming. I know that he's given me this promise, and it's going to happen. And there's going to be no mistaking it. We're not going to get a call from Japan, and they're saying, hey, the Lord's coming, we just saw him, you guys will see him in a couple hours. That's not how it's going to be, okay? We're all going to see it at the same time. There is going to be no doubting that the Lord has come. You don't have to worry about it. You don't have to worry that someone's going to have to give you a call and say, hey, I just heard that, you know, resurrection is just around the corner because he saw him coming down from the clouds. It's not going to happen. You are going to hear the trumpet, okay? You are going to see with your own eyes, whether you're inside, outside, upside, downside, you are going to see the return of the Lord. And it's going to be magnificent. The only way that it's not going to be magnificent, if you are not in a relationship with Jesus Christ. Because at that moment, it is going to be the scariest thing in all the world. People are going to melt in fear. People are going to be running for the mountains, the word says. They're going to try to hide themselves in the crags of the mountains. And it is going to be the most fearful time for those who do not know Jesus. But for those of us who know Jesus, it's going to be the moment to fall down on your knees, not in fear, but in glory. It's going to be that moment that you're going to get to say, I told you so, I told you so, I told you so. I knew he was coming. I knew he was coming. See, there he is. And we're going to gather up as quick as we can. We're going to say, we're going to be singing and we're going to be praising because all the garbage of the world, all the stuff that people have heaped on us, all the lies that Satan has perpetrated in this world are going to be dismissed. Boom! Amen. Like a firecracker. They're going to go, oh, well, dop, dop, deep, dop. They're going to have no explanation because at that point in time, it's done. It's done. There's a confidence. There's a confidence in what he's saying. You know, I don't know exactly how it's going to happen, but I know it's going to happen. I know it's going to happen. And it's going to be amazing. And the promise is going to come true. These people who live by faith, it tells us right here. It says they did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance. And they admitted that they were aliens and strangers on the earth. Chris Gibson loves that passage. I know he does because he writes it on every text message I ever get from him. He doesn't write that verse. He has this little, is it all right if I share this, Chris? Everyone knows you're weird anyway, dude. So let's just get it all out in the open so everyone knows for sure, all right? Every text that I get from Chris Gibson ends with the same thing. And he kind of freaked me out. I thought he was a little weird the first several times he did this. But every text I get from Chris, and you guys can admit, do you do this to everyone or just me? Everyone? Excellent. Okay. He ends his text with, aliens are real. Every text I get from Chris, at the end of it says, aliens are real. And I remember the first couple of times I got this text from Chris, and it doesn't matter whether he's talking about hot dogs or hamburgers or the tea in China. Every text ends with, aliens are real. I was thinking, this dude is weird. What is he talking about? Is he like an extraterrestrial? Is he like a conspiracy theory guy? And maybe that's what it is. I don't know. But finally, one day, I texted back, yeah, and I'm one of them. And I remember this distinctly. I don't remember what it was. Do you remember this, Chris? Did I finally get it? Okay, good. I finally texted back to him, yep, I agree, and I'm one of them. And he texted back this big smiley face. He says, me too, brother. You see, we're aliens. We're aliens. This is not our home. How do you recognize aliens? Not by big heads or little eyes, beady eyes or green eyes or these guys in the Martian. That's not an alien. How do you recognize an alien? When I was living in Pleasant Hill, that tells you right now, I'm an alien of Pleasant Hill. Okay, when we were ministering Pleasant Hill, everyone knew I was an outsider because they'd say, where do you live? And I would say, I live in Pleasant Hill. And they say, oh, how long have you been there? You know why? Because I didn't say Pleasant Hill. If you're from Pleasant Hill, you say Pleasant Hill. But if you're from outside Pleasant Hill, you say Pleasant Hill. I didn't have the right vernacular. That's a big word for me. I didn't talk the right way. If you're an alien, you don't look the right way. When I went out to Wyoming, I was trying to make myself look so I didn't stand out, okay? I was trying to make sure I didn't stand out, so I went cowboy hat shopping. In fact, we went cowboy hat shopping for like 2 months almost before I went. I was so excited about the trip. I just wanted to go out and be a cowboy, you know what I'm saying? And so I knew I had to have a cowboy hat because cowboys wear cowboy hats. So I was looking at all these different cowboy hats, and finally I bought this cowboy hat. It was like a, whew, It was a nice cowboy hat. It is a nice cowboy hat. It looked like the one from Crocodile, not Crocodile Dundee, the guy that rode the horses, Snowy River, that guy. You know, he had the brown rim hat that's kind of, it's not felt and it's not leather. It's kind of that treated stuff, brown. And it was a nice looking hat. It had a string on it, you know, to go underneath your chin when you're riding fast so your hat doesn't blow off and stuff. And I remember, I probably told you this story already. So I had my cowboy hat and I was riding out to Wyoming and I was excited. But the whole time out there, I wore my ball cap. You know what I'm saying? Because I didn't want the sun in my eyes. And the cowboy hat hit the back of the seat, so I didn't want to wear my cowboy hat, so I wore my ball cap. And so when I finally got to Wyoming and met Chris Limmer and stepped out of the truck and said, "Hey, are you Chris?" And he says, "Yeah, are you Eldon?" He says, "Yeah." I said, "Yeah, I'm Eldon." He says, "Well, grab your stuff. Let's go." And I had to go pick out my horse. I had my cowboy hat sitting on the seat next to me, okay? And so as soon as I got there, he says, grab your gear and go find a horse. I grabbed my cowboy hat and I put it on. And I remember Chris was walking away. And then when I stepped out, I had my cap on before. And I put my cowboy hat, I remember the look that Chris gave me. He went like that. I didn't realize what it was. He never told me or anything. But he kind of looked at me funny. And I thought, well, you've just never seen one of these kind of hats, you know. And so I went out, caught my horse, and did everything. And the next day, all the other cowboys came to help us do the different things that we had. And every single cowboy that got out of their truck, and here I am wearing my cowboy hat with a little string on it, you know. And every cowboy that stepped out of the truck, every one of them went. I'm serious. Every one of them kind of looked at me like, who's that guy? Where'd he come from? That dude's an alien. Nobody wears cowboy. And then I started looking around, and nobody wore cowboy hats like Snowy River guy. They all had a certain type of cowboy hat. And every region, do you realize this? Every region out west has their own style of cowboy hat that they wear. Do you realize that? And different colors at different times. I was talking with Larry Stevens here this week, and I noticed in picture, he won first place in the third division in the barrel horses. If you see Larry Stevens, congratulate him. He won a brand new saddle. Okay, but I noticed in the pictures that he had a black cowboy hat on, and all the time I saw Larry, always, you know this, he's always wearing a white cowboy hat, and I was like, why are you wearing a black cowboy hat? He looks at me and goes, well, it's after Labor Day. There are so many rules to this cowboy thing that I don't know anything about. Okay, you put away the straw cowboy hats, and you got the felt ones, and you go from black to white to purple. I don't know what other Christmas time they might wear green. I don't know. But see, every region, every town, every place that you live in, they have their own way of talking, their own way of speaking, their own way of doing things, their own traditions, their own values. All these different things. Do you realize that? You know what? We're supposed to be aliens in this world. We're supposed to let our light shine. We're supposed to have a different language, a different value. We're supposed to have a different heart. We're supposed to look different, act different, be different than the people of the world. Does that mean we're supposed to be perfect? Well, he's not saying, he'd love for us to be perfect, but he knows we're not. He says, I want you to be different. I want you to stand out. I want your light to shine. Not in a, oh, they are just so offensive and so, ugh. He wants us to have a light that shines, that draws people in, not pushes people away. There's a big difference. A big difference. Because I can be different and push people away. Okay? Or I can be different and draw people in. They can see my light and desire what I have inside. The witness that I've got. See, he wants us to be aliens. He wants us to shine our lights. That's what he's talking about very plainly when he says they were aliens. They were different. You see, Abraham, when he went into the promised land, he stood out. He was different. His values were different than Sodom and Gomorrah. His values were different than the people around him. He stood out, and people noticed it. And that's what he's calling us to be when he says, I want you to be aliens and strangers. And this isn't just here in this passage. If you want to, look in 1 Peter what he says about this. If you want a better understanding about it, the 1 Peter class could probably say it to you by heart. I've got to read it. In 1 Peter chapter 1, beginning at verse 13, It says, therefore, prepare your minds for action. Be self-controlled. Set your hope fully on the grace to be given you when Jesus Christ is revealed. As obedient children, do not conform. Listen to it. Do not conform to the evil desires you had when you lived in ignorance. But just as he who called you is holy, so be holy in all you do. For it is written, be holy because I'm holy. Since you call on a Father who judges each man's work impartially, live your lives as strangers here in reverent fear. Did you hear that? Live your lives as strangers here in reverent fear. For you know that it is not with perishable things that such as silver or gold that you were redeemed or bought from the empty way of life handed down to you from your forefathers, but with the precious blood of Jesus Christ, a lamb without blemish or defect. He says, I called you into this new life. Take a look in 1 Peter chapter 2. 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 9 through 12. Oh. It's all good. I could just go back and just we could just read through 1 Peter again, couldn't we, real easily. But look what it says here in verses 9 through 12. It says, I just love all this. Let's just do what I said here. But you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood. You're set apart. You're set apart because Christ paid for you with his precious blood, okay? That's what makes you set apart. He says, a holy nation, a people belonging to God, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into this wonderful light. Once you were not a people, but now you're the people of God. Once you had not received mercy, but now you've received mercy. Dear friends, I urge you as aliens and strangers in the world to abstain from the sinful desires which war against your soul. Live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us. You see, God's called us to be set apart. He says, you know what? I've made you into a people. I've made you into a family. I want you to love one another like a family. I want you to spend time with one another. I want you to put this relationship as a priority in your life. Your relationship with God and your relationship with one another. I want you to spend time with each other. Stop bickering. Stop fighting. Stop letting the world get in the way and let your love shine in the world. This is your family. Love them. And it'll make a huge difference. Because right now in the world, families just don't get along. If you're in a family right now that all the brothers, I feel so blessed. Where's my sister at? Right there. I feel so blessed to be in our family. I really do. I've got five sisters and one brother. And I love every one of you guys. And we love each other. You know what? We can't wait for Thanksgiving and Christmas and all the different times come along. I feel so blessed to be a part of that family. But I know, because I deal with it on a daily basis, it seems like, there are so many families right now that don't get along. Brothers and sisters and moms and dads and aunts and uncles. It's sad. I'm not going to go into that story. But they're broken over stupid stuff. Over things that really don't matter. You know what? If you want to have a light that shines in this world, get along with your family. And I don't just mean your brothers and sisters. I mean your brothers and sisters in Christ. Be united and glorify God. That alone will make you an alien in this world. That alone. What's another one of these characteristics of faith? We haven't fun yet. I love this because I keep looking back to Wyoming. I got stories. I could tell you about the chinks that I wore when I put on my chinks. In my spurs, I finally went and got some spurs so I fit in and all these different things. They didn't look at me quite as weird the second time because I had the right hat. I had my chinks on. I had my spurs on. But they were still laughing at me because I still didn't know what I was doing. But anyway, here we go. You're going to stand out. Oh, I like this next part. Hebrews chapter 11. I love this next part. It says, these aliens and strangers, people who say such things show they are looking for a country of their own. Something real important in the midst of that. People who say such things show that they're, I have a hard time saying that without, people who say such things show they are looking for a country of their own. You know what the key word is in that passage to me? Is they're looking. They're looking. They haven't arrived. They're looking. Do you realize that you're not there yet? Okay, I know a couple people realize that. You're not there. We're journeying. We're on a journey. We're on a quest. We're on a pilgrimage right now. We're on a journey to where God wants us to be. We're not there. Okay? We're on the way there. We're traveling. We're taking steps. But we're not there. And a big part of the destination is the journey. You know what I mean? Sometimes that's some of the most exciting parts of it. It's not going to be with heaven, because heaven is going to blow you away. I mean, this is going to be so amazing. You're not going to remember anything else when you get there. But right now, the journey is the most important part right now. And that's okay. That's a good thing. I love the journey. So many times on the journey, people are like, oh man, this is such a pain to be going through this, and all the problems I'm facing, and, you know, flat tires and running out of gas and not knowing where I'm going, the GPS telling me there's a road there and there's not, and all these different things. That's part of the journey. That's part of the fun, because if you think about it, when you go on vacation, it's all good, right? You have fun, all right? But what are the things that you really remember? Kathy's like, when have we been on a vacation? No. So what are the things together? What are the things that you really remember? You just got back from Disney World, right, Randy? What are the things that, what's the thing that just stands out in your mind more than anything else?
Obviously, the drive was a big part of it.
The drive was a big part of it. And you're not just saying that because I'm just doing this, right? It's because you spent time together. And was it always fun?
Yeah.
Did you see that face? He's like, dude, don't take me there. Not always fun. It's not always fun, but you know what? It's honestly, now Andrew's smiling too. That's good. So he's off the hook now. Sometimes it's the hard things, the difficult, the flat tires, and those things that happen on the journey that you remember most. It really is, because those are the times that God is working in your life, in those hard moments, in those hard circumstances, and when things are not going right, that's when all of a sudden you recognize that you have to rely on someone else. It's at those times that God brings new people into your lives, new circumstances, new opportunities. The hard times are the things that God is growing you into who He wants you to be. You know the Footprints in the Sand whole song or poem or whatever? It's in those hard times that God picks you up and carried you. That's when there's one set of footprints in the sand. You see, it's a journey. The hard times are not the times that you should be drawing away. Those are the times that God is drawing you in, teaching you something new. I know the last trip that I went to Wyoming here in the spring, I thought I was going out to brand cattle. I mean, that was my vision of what was going on. That's what I was going to go out and do. I was going to go out and help Chris Limmer and his family brand their cattle, their new calves and stuff like that for the year. I had no idea that when I got out there that it was going to be something so different. I had no idea that when I got there, there was going to be a tragedy in their life that God sent me there to be able to help them through that time. I had no idea that Chris's son, his wife, was going to fall off and hit her head so hard that she just didn't know anything anymore, that they're going to have to take her out to Nebraska, and the whole family were going to have to go out there to be with them because they weren't sure if she was really going to live. I had no idea I was going out there to take care of Chris's ranch, which I had no idea what I was doing, for 3 days while everyone was gone. I had no idea I was going to be driving this tractor and trying to take these 800-pound bales that were stacked up. I had no idea I was going to have to be driving a tractor and try to take the top bales off to go and feed them. I had no idea I was going to be putting them on a rack and driving out in the middle of nowhere, putting the truck in gear and getting out of the truck and going onto the trail to flake off the hay when no one's driving the truck. I had no idea that any of these things were going to happen. I had no clue. I thought I was going to go out and brand cattle. But God had totally different ideas. And it was awesome. It was incredible. And I wouldn't have changed any of it for the world except for Sherry getting hurt. You see, that's part of the journey that we're on. That's part of this process that we're going through. And we can have a confidence that God is going to take us all the way through that journey. No matter what you're facing, no matter what the trial, you're going to look back on it and say, that's the moment that God was drawing me in. That's the moment that I felt the closest. That's where he wanted me, right then, for where I'm at right now. And that makes me be able to take the next step a little easier, and the next step a little easier, because I can look back and see how faithful my God was through every trial, through every circumstance. And he is. He is faithful. He is faithful. It says in verse 15, if they'd been thinking of the country they had left, they've had an opportunity to return. Instead, they were longing for a better country, a heavenly one. Yeah. You know, people of faith, not only are they confident, I got these things written down, not only are they aliens, not only do they value the journey, but people that have faith have discernment. They can tell what's real and what's not real. You see, what's going on right here is Abraham at any point in time could have gone back to the land of Ur. He could have gone back to the land of the Chaldeans. He could have gone back any point in time that he wanted to. He could have said, oh, the promised land is great, but I'm more comfortable back here. And he could have gone back at any point in time. As a matter of fact, he would not even go back to find a wife for his son Isaac. He sent his servant back. He says, you know what? Don't ever let my son go backwards. We're here. This is where God wants us. You go back and bring a woman to marry my son. You see, so many times we don't have the discernment. But people of faith will discern what's real and what's not. Do you want to know what's real and what's not? Okay, let's have a little test. Is this real? It's not. This isn't real. What do you mean it's not real? I can see it. It looks real to me. I can stand on it. I can sit on it. This isn't real. You know why that's not real? It's not going to last. When the trumpet sounds and the time is no more and the Lord returns, it's all going to be destroyed. It's not real. That's not going to last. Do you hear me? I can discern whether this is important or not. That's not important. That chair is not important. Is this building real? No. I can discern that this building is not. Whoa. We might want to look into that. No, it's fine. Trust me, it's all right. I can discern whether this building is going to stand the test of time, and guess what? It's not. What's real? What's real? Shelby, stand up. Turn around here. This is real. This is real. Because this is eternal. She's going to stand the test of time. She's going to live. This is real. I can discern that. She's real. She's going to last. That's where I need to invest. That's where I need to put my time. That's where I need to put my effort. That's where I need to put my resources. That's where I need to invest. In people. Because they're eternal. Their souls will go on forever. Either in hell or in heaven. And if I have anything to say about it, it's going to be in heaven. Because you're going to know Jesus. That's real. I can discern that. And they knew that. They didn't want to go back to a place that was going to be destroyed. They were looking forward to a place that was not going to be destroyed. A country that could not be burned. That was eternal. That's real. You see, those are people who live by faith. They understand
That's real. They invest in what is real and not what is temporal. They build their treasures in heaven, not on earth. You see, that's real. That's people who live by faith.
Last verse. I'm done. Just about. They're longing for a better country, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. You see, people who live by faith are secure. They're secure. They know that God has prepared a place for them, that Jesus is preparing a place for him. And I read one comment from someone that I know I should probably write it down to give them credit, but I'm wondering if they probably stole it from someone else too, so I'm going to steal it, and I'm just going to throw this out there. It was a thought that I'd never had in my life before, and it was amazing. God took 6 days to create the earth. 6 days to create everything you see and know. What is heaven going to be like if he's still preparing heaven for us right now? If he's been preparing heaven for two... Have you ever thought about that? I'd never thought about that. What is heaven going to be like if he's been preparing it for 2,000 years up to this point? If he created all the world in 6 days and he's preparing the heaven for 2,000 years, what is that going to be like? That's security. That in my mind is worth investing everything for. Because he says, I'm going there and I'm going to be preparing a place for you. Preparing a place for you. And when I come back, I'm going to take you to be with me where I am. John 14 is a beautiful passage. I want to hang on to it with both hands because it makes everything worthwhile. So let me ask you real quick. This is it. Are you living by faith or by sight according to what's going on here? He says, without faith, it's impossible to please God. What do we need to change? Where do we need to invest? What do we need to do? How do we need to live? I know just my heart's attitude is changing just by reading this passage. And recognizing that the stuff of this world is just a stepping stone to what he has prepared for us. And the joy that I can live with, looking not clearly, but seeing things in the distance and knowing it's there and knowing it's going to come true, makes all the difference for tomorrow and today and the next day and the plans that I have. Because I know it's all in the palm of God's hand. Do you believe that?
Yes.
Do you? If you don't, you need to come see me. Let me share you the whole story of what God started many years ago and how he's bringing it to fulfillment. Let me show you the whole story of God's plan because it's absolutely amazing. And in the center of that story is you. And he loves you. He wants to bring you home. Amen. We're going to sing a song now. I know I'm supposed to stop because I've got no more words in my head. We're going to sing a song, and hopefully somewhere along the way today, God's spoken to you. Maybe he said, you know what, it's time to put on your fuzzy ears and become an alien. I don't know. Maybe it's time for you to start investing in the things that are real, that are real, that are going to last. Stop worrying about the things that are going to be destroyed. What's he calling you to do today? All I'm going to ask is that you just take one step today, one step closer into that relationship that he's calling you, one step further in the journey that he's walking along with us, and trust him. With every step. knowing that our God is faithful. He is true, and he is worthy of all praise.